and Norm Shealy.
NormShealy.com.
You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and tonight I have with us Dr. Chris Melitas, and we're going to talk about his book, His Change of Life and Male Menopause. How are you, Dr. Melitas?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much, Eva.
Thanks for coming on my show, and what a fabulous book this is.
Well, thank you. It's always a delight to work with you, and thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. So before we get started, take a few minutes and tell us who you are, how you came to do what you do, where we can find you. And also, I want you to take a minute and talk about Dr. Mead and the laboratories that he has and what they do, because he's been such a good guy about helping us out and giving me all these tests and books. So if you don't mind doing that, that would be great.
Okay, well, certainly. Well, I'm a naturopathic physician. I practice in Oregon, been doing it for almost 18 years, and I've had the privilege and honor to help lots of people over the course of time, and just written my 19th book. Today we're going to be talking about the 18th book, which is called His Change of Life, and I've actually do a lot of work with bioidentical hormones and really helping people on their wellness journey. And on that journey, I get to meet wonderful people like yourself, which have a similar mission, and also, Dr. Jay Mead of Labrix, and he actually offers hormone testing so that we don't have to guess. We can actually test. And I have a big philosophy in my practice, test, don't guess. And so what Jay actually does through Labrix, and his tests are offered through complementary prescriptions, which we'll talk about later, is actually allowing consumers to actually gain access to information often their conventional doctors may not be offering them about their hormonal balance. And we're all hormonal creatures, guys too, and so often we forget that, and that's why I wrote my book called His Change of Life, because women have 28-day cycles prior to menopause, while guys have 24-hour cycles, and it's pretty amazing, and the women out there already know that the guys in their lives already have those cycles, but sometimes guys are oblivious to it. So part of it's about being educated and realize we're all hormonal creatures, and our hormones actually contribute a lot to who and what we are.
And where can we find you, and where can we find Labrix Laboratories?
Well, sure. Well, actually, you can find me at drmelitas.com, drmelitis.com, drmelitas.com, and you just Google me. And Dr. Jay Mead, he's at Labrix, labrix.com. And Labrix is actually here in Oregon. He's actually in Oregon City. It's actually where the pioneers came over way back in the day, and when they were pioneering and actually came along the Oregon Trail, and he's right by where the exit was into Oregon. So it's pretty amazing, and he's pioneering in many ways, so Dr. Mead's phenomenal. And his tests are offered directly to consumers through a company called cpmedical.net. It's complimentary prescriptions, and people can order the test offered through his lab, and then they get results back with an interpretation from his lab, which, of course, always great to share with your doctor, but gives you a little heads up as to where we might have a little fine-tuning, including our stress hormones. So often we think of hormones just like estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, but I just recently completed one of his tests, and then at my little adrenal glands, we've all heard of adrenal burnout or adrenal fatigue, just weren't doing as good, and so many of us, due to the chronic stress, economy, politics, the catastrophe, of course, in Haiti, all of these things wear down on us, whether we know it or not, and so you can actually measure your cortisol levels, and great laboratory to use, and like I said, available through cpmedical.net. And directly getting all of Dr. Mead's tests directly to consumers.
Now, before we go on about these books, I want to say, you, a couple of years ago, you wrote a teaching book that was about 3 or 4 inches thick. That was a really good book. What was that?
Oh, that was called Clinical Handbook of Nutrition. And actually, I had a privilege of doing that one, too. I have a real passion for education. And one of the things which a lot of doctors forget is the word disore, which is the word doctor in Latin, means one who teaches, and just tremendous passion all my life to educate, and that's, of course, what you're all about, too, and that's why it's such a privilege to be on your show.
Oh, thanks, Chris. You just made my weekend. Okay. Tell me, you know, I wrote that article that I sent you today. So many people think the word hormone has something to do with the sexual-related organs or sexual-related hormones. It's so much more than that. Can you tell us What is meant by that word? What is a hormone?
Well, certainly. A hormone is something made in our body, and it actually has a production in one part of our body. So let's say the ovaries or the testicles or the adrenal glands or even our brain, like melatonin, helps us sleep. But it has a systemic effect. So it's basically a messenger. It carries a communication to the 75 trillion cells that make up your body. So whether it be estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, which are in both men and women, or hormones like cortisol, which is related to stress, but it also wakes us up in the morning, or DHEA, which is a grandmother of all hormones, or pregnenolone, which helps with concentration and focus. These hormones, though made in specific parts of the body, have global effects, affecting the, are basically in our entirety, all, from our tippy toes all the way to the top of our heads, all 75 trillion cells.
And what is the difference between when you supplement hormones, what is the difference between a pharmaceutical or a laboratory hormone and a bioidentical hormone? Or let me rephrase it, a bioidentical hormone and a natural hormone.
Oh, excellent question. Yeah, actually, hormones are becoming very, very popular, and even individuals like Suzanne Summers really helping educate the public towards those concepts of hormone, pharmaceutical, synthetic, bioidentical. Well, a natural hormone, of course, is made within your body. Bioidentical hormones are designed to best mimic the levels and type of hormone within your body. For example, estrogen is a classic example. We, as men and women, actually make estrogen. Of course, men don't make as much, and women generally make more. And the thing is, we make estradiol, estrone, and estriol, three hormones. So a bioidentical hormone seeks to mirror that balance within the body, whereas lots of times just one hormone is given on the pharmaceutical side of things. So a natural hormone, like each one of these, could actually be given at a pharmaceutical level, but usually it's modified due to patents to make it patentable. You really cannot patent natural things. So they'll add a little human knowledge, or sometimes a lot of human knowledge, and sometimes we actually try to make things better through chemistry. We all know that usually doesn't work so well long-term because our body knows what it's used to generation after generation and year after year. So if we go synthetic, we start having a lot of side effects. And bioidentical hormones have powerful effects within our body, but they're designed to try to mirror the hormonal effects within our body. So, for example, with my patients, if I give them a hormone, I'll give them something like Biest, which is estriol and estradiol, in a ratio which is believed to also occur most naturally in a body, opposed to just one hormone. We try to mirror what nature has provided originally.
Okay, that's certainly interesting information. I guess you could write a book on just that. Okay, what is andropause and what are androgens? And could you tell us about the andropause assessment? What does that tell us? Why do we need to do it?
Oh, excellent. Well, andropause is basically the parallel to menopause. We focus often on women's hormones, and women's hormones are very, very important. However, men are hormonal creatures too, and as a result, it's estimated that at the age of 30, one in four guys have a low measurable testosterone. So if we grabbed 100 guys and took them in and got their blood tested randomly, about one in four of them would actually, at the age of 30, have low testosterone levels. And, of course, testosterone causes the secondary sex characteristics, but not just reproductively, the deeper voice, the muscle mass, the endurance, and also for guys, concentration. Just like when women go through menopause, often they might have a little anxiety, a little memory challenges, because there's a hormonal shift in who they are. Well, likewise for gentlemen, the same thing happens. The hormone levels drop. They feel out of sorts, they feel depressed, they start gaining weight in the midriff, their muscle mass decreases, and there's a certain degree of depression or apathy. So that's andropause, and actually the parallel to that is often menopause. If either a male or a female goes through this quote-unquote change or transition naturally, and they have healthy adrenal glands, it's a much smoother transition. But our adrenal glands for both male and female are what I call the buffer. Allows our body to actually go through transitions and challenges in a very definitive fashion because our adrenal glands produce DHEA, which is actually the building block for both estrogen and testosterone. But if we're worn out, stressed out, not really following the inner harmony within our body, what's going to happen is by the time our ovaries, or in the case of gentlemen, testicles, actually quiet down and stop producing as much, voila, is a poor transition. In fact, a lot of times, grasping for straws, much like going down for the third time when swimming, not a good scenario. And so guys are suffering just often like women do. But guys are also challenged by the same challenge that women are, that we have phytoestrogens, xenoestrogens in our environment, which I know you wrote about in your article.
Can you tell my listeners what those things are?
Well, certainly.
And where the, you know, why do they need to be concerned about them?
Wow, a great question. Actually, we are living in a hormonal milieu outside of our body. So even focusing on balance within our body, focusing on trying to gain our inner peace and nourishing our body well, our environment is becoming more and more toxic. We all know that either intuitively or we've read about it. But they've actually done studies showing that like men that work in factories in China are now becoming infertile and have low testosterone levels from something called bisphenol A, commonly found in plastics and plastic manufacturing. So whether it's a plastic water bottle, an herbicide, a pesticide, or the hormones they feed our chickens or our beef or our cattle. But how do you get more breast meat out of a chicken? You feed them estrogens to increase those breast tissues so you have more white meat.
I never thought about that.
Huh?
Interesting. I never thought about that.
Yeah, well, sometimes it's better not to, especially before dinner.
Yeah.
And that's where, of course, free range and organic is by far better. But we're living in a chemistry class, and we're the test tubes, and the world in which we live is the bench at which the scientists practice their craft, and we're just the guinea pigs in the little cages. And what we have to do is break free of that with enhanced consciousness, being really aware and really contemplative that these hormonal-like substances in our environment can either be entered into our body passively, or we can take a very proactive stance and avoid that reactive fact that if we keep on being passive, and of course silence is acceptance, then we're going to actually end up with some of the same problems that the lab animals do when they're doing experiments on them as well.
I didn't mean to get off track there. I just wanted them to understand that. I want to go back to the andropause assessment. Can you run down through some of the symptoms so people will know if that's something that they need to be paying attention to?
Well, certainly. And one of the best gifts we can ever give to ourselves, our friends, our family, our loved ones, is kind of knowing, is what they're experiencing a normal aging process, and we're going to have to define that, or is it premature aging? So often when we hit certain ages, 30, 40, or the big 5-0, we're saying, oh, yeah, that's normal for a 50-year-old. Well, we have to define what normal is. Mediocrity is not normal. I think we all have friends and family which are maybe, let's say, 50 or 60. And they run circles around somebody 10, 20 years younger than them because they are actually working towards that level of wellness. So what happens with our aging process, and especially hormonally, is we just accept that. But common andropausal symptoms, which means low testosterone levels, can actually result in depression, muscle weakness, heart problems, higher blood pressure, and even erectile dysfunction. So often when we either watch television, see an ad in a magazine, we see all these either drugs and or supplements for erectile dysfunction. That's more a barometer of one's overall health than actually a pill deficiency. And, of course, testosterone can do wonders in helping support that pathway and actually addressing the cause. So, and we'll talk more about that probably in a little while. But in addition, other than the depression, muscle changes, also weight gain, also apathy, anxiety, heart palpitations, and fretfulness, and a sense of foreboding are all classical signs of low testosterone. In my clinical practice, I see everything from late 20s all the way, of course, into the well into the 80s with low testosterone. We expect a 50, 60-year-old somethings to be low in testosterone. But when I see my 30 and 40-year-old guys, prime of their life, should be going forth and they're feeling tired, depressed, anxious. They often are more ill and more injuries, more shoulder, leg, knee injuries because their muscle mass can't support their structure. And much like a house that's poorly constructed, it starts falling apart.
So the fact that there are external muscles that we can see and adipose that we can see, I guess that would mean that since heart is a muscle, that it's wasting away too.
Excellent point. And actually, I'm glad you brought that up. The heart is so amazing, and so often we forget that it pumps blood through 60,000 miles of blood vessels each and every day, beats 100,000 times a day or more if you have a pulse of 72 beats. And it, of course, is a mere 10-ounce muscle with four amazing chambers, and the heart becomes weaker with lower testosterone levels. And one of the things which is sad is, of course, we're talking about men right now, and, of course, my book's focused towards men, but women also have testosterone. And so often when women grow through menopause, and in the past, they actually would give a woman either Premarin, pregnant mare urine, and or, of course, a little progesterone. But they always forgot that women also had testosterone made by their ovaries, but they never replaced that. It was very 1900-ish of the approach to medicine. And that's where bioidentical comes in once again, because it's replacement of all the hormones as your body was making it, maybe at 30, 35, 40. And not that we're going to try to keep people in a suspended animation, but we want to address the symptoms of the patient so that we can actually help them feel better and devour life while doing the blood test, doing the salivary test, in this case through like Labrix, which can once again be accessed through cpmedical.net. You can actually gain access to all of the Labrix tests and or do iodine tests and a whole lot of other tests as well. But for a guy and or a woman, it's all about staying in a hormonal balance. And for those people that are listening which aren't yet in a hormonal transition that they know of, this is the perfect time to test, because if you can get a benchmark of where you're at now when you're feeling good and in the zone, as you get older, which happens to all of us, we can be in denial of it, but then you'll know, okay, this is when I was feeling really good. Make a little note. January 2010, took test, feeling wonderful, no anxiety, no depression. Okay, great. 15 years from now, if you start feeling a little faltering of your wellness, you'll at least know where you're at, and you can try to replicate that through using bioidentical hormones and or other things that need to be adjusted in your diet and lifestyle.
Could you talk a little bit about the role of testosterone, cholesterol, and vitamin D?
Excellent point. If we all look at cholesterol, we all know, oh, we don't want to have too high of cholesterol. That's actually bad for us. But there's quite a bit of evidence that now we've gone the other extreme. We've actually lowered our cholesterol to such an extent often through particularly drug therapies that we actually are decreasing our building blocks for all of our hormones. So cholesterol is a building block for testosterone, estrogen, progesterone, cortisol, cortisone. And so once again, if you decrease your cholesterol too much, of course, you're going to end up with not enough building block to make your hormones. So the other big issue, which we've all been sold a bill of goods on, is nobody's measuring the bad factors of cholesterol, which isn't just a total number, but how much oxidation occurs. And so oxidation of cholesterol means, do we have free radical damage because we don't have enough antioxidants in our diets? And is that actually contributing a larger portion of heart disease than just pure total number? So you have to have a good amount of cholesterol in order to make your hormones. And then, of course, cholesterol is also made into vitamin D. And so if you don't have enough cholesterol, you're not going to be able to make vitamin D. And in my clinical practice, the number one thing which I do for everybody, even before measuring hormones, is vitamin D testing. Because vitamin D is antiviral, bolsters the immune system, is impacting over 60 different genes in our body, has been shown to help with osteoporosis, gastrointestinal, as well as breast disease, including the cancers, and actually being protective. And also for guys, very important to protect the prostate, which often we forget. So the whole cholesterol vitamin D myth is huge, and we've all been told don't go out in the sun because you're going to get skin cancer. Indeed, you don't want to be a weakened warrior in today's world. However, if you avoid the sun, you better supplement with some vitamin D to make sure your blood levels stay high enough to protect you.
Okay, prostate was actually my next question. Prostate issues and testicular issues. Prostatitis. What can you tell us about that?
Oh, excellent question. So prostatitis is actually, of course, inflammation of the prostate. So whenever we tack on the word itis to any part of our body, whether it be sinusitis, our throat, pharyngitis, of course for little kids, especially otitis, that's ear problems, colitis, we have inflammation. So if we have inflammation of the prostate, the question is why is the prostate inflamed? So it can be due to either a bacterial problem, a viral problem, an autoimmune problem. But once again, realizing that testosterone helps develop the prostate. It's also to have a healthy level of testosterone, not too much, not too little, to actually, once again, measure the prostate health, because once again, those tissues are hormonally dependent. No different than a female's breast tissues or some of her skin quality or hair quality is estrogen dependent to a large extent. For a man, if his testosterone levels drop too much, the prostate's more likely to succumb to external factors. And so once again, testosterone is not the panacea. It's not going to solve all problems, but maintaining a healthy level of hormone for male and female is critical, especially age-indexed. And once again, so many people, both male and female, are going through premature gonadal failure, simple term. Gonads, of course, are ovaries or testicles, and are prematurely going through this process. And we have to wonder, why are people going through early changes? You know, when they are adolescent, everybody's going through that hormonal transition earlier than they used to. A lot of those adrenal glands, ovaries, and testicular functions are actually pittering out prematurely now, and it's not no surprise. The same hormones which cause us to prematurely go into puberty are now also causing us to ultimately falter and fail.
Could you talk a little bit about, and I probably should have done this at the beginning, but a little bit about the role of the pituitary and the hypothalamus so people will understand how those things work?
Oh, excellent. Well, all the glands we've talked about so far, the adrenal glands, the ovarian and testicular functions, are all driven by their own bosses. Everything is a feedback loop. And so the hypothalamus talks to the pituitary. So if you were to think about it, the hypothalamus is like the big boss. The pituitary is the middle management, which communicates then down to each of the target organs, whether it be the thyroid, which we haven't talked about yet much, and the ovaries, the testicles, the adrenal glands. So there's this feedback loop, and think of the hypothalamus and pituitary like master chefs in a fancy kitchen, and kind of tasting the bloodstream and the tissues and saying, is there enough hormone? If there's not enough hormone, the hypothalamus and pituitary actually send out more messages. Well, we need more salt or we need more spice. In this case, it's hormone that they're sending down. So via the hypothalamus pituitary, we'll have hormones like ACTH, TSH, LH, FSH, which stand for luteinizing hormone and follicle stimulating hormone, which are interesting because the same luteinizing and follicle stimulating hormone, which are abbreviated LH and FSH, are made by the pituitary gland and actually control both the ovaries and testicular function. And so as a result, strangely enough, or not so, man and woman alike have the same hormonal control from the pituitary gland, just driving different levels of hormones. And of course, if you look at male or female hormonally, we have the sharp contrast, yin and yang or black and white. But if you think about each of us as male or female, there's various levels of hormones in each one of us. So you can have 10 females or 10 males, and we were to do blood levels, and a man's testosterone level, for example, is allowed to be anywhere from 400 to 1,600 when he's young. The question is, a gentleman can be very male at 500, whereas you might have a male at 1,500, which has a bigger, thicker beard, more hormonal impact, maybe larger muscles, stronger endurance or stamina. And once again, you have to figure for him, a little drop and hormone is a huge thing. So if all of a sudden it goes from 1,500 to 400, that's a 900-point or 1,100-point drop, whereas a guy that started at 500 and he goes down to 400, it's a drop for him relatively. So this is where the bioidentical concept comes in of testing where you're at now, then reproducing or at least mirroring the hormonal shift over the course of time. But once again, it's all pituitary hypothalamus-driven, going down and communicating to all your tissues and trying to maintain the normal level for you, the unique individual biochemically.
Let's talk about thyroid for a minute. So many people, when they go to their conventional healthcare physician, will get a thyroid test and it'll come back and say it's fine, when really it's probably not fine. Why is that? Are they doing the right test? Is there other tests available? And what can we do to support it?
Excellent question. The thyroid tests, which are most commonly ran, and it's gotten a little bit better over the course of the last 2 or 3 years, but the standard test is will be a TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone. It's a measurement of how the pituitary gland is talking to the thyroid gland. So that would be like analyzing a factory and figuring out how is the factory doing by just doing an analysis of how the boss or the foreman or forewoman is doing. That's what the TSH is doing. It's measuring how the boss's performance is. Now, the boss could either be on track or off track, maybe in touch or out of touch with the rest of the factory and the consciousness of the body. And so a TSH doesn't give the full true sense of things. It's really a screening test. And the range for a TSH varies from lab to lab, but often ranges from 0.5 to about 4.5. So many of the conventional physicians and other providers out there will actually look at that and say, oh, you're in the range because you're a 4.0. Well, remember, the range is 0.5 to 4.5. Well, if your TSH is on the higher side, that actually means that the boss, which is in this case would be the pituitary gland, is putting out a pretty strong command to all the employees, in this case the thyroid gland, to actually work pretty hard because the thyroid stimulating hormone is cranked up. Likewise, we can have a person on the low side of TSH, which actually would be inversely in saying there's actually a higher thyroid function. So the thing is, we want to also ask our physicians, and this is what I do for my patients, to do a free T4, so F-R-E-E, T4, a free T3, and a reverse T3. And the reason we're talking about T4s, T3s in a free form is those are the biologically active hormone in your body. And at the very least, you want to be in the middle of these ranges. And in the case of TSH, you really don't want to be above the middle of that range. And lots of doctors argue a little bit on the lower side. And then we have complex but simple things called reverse T3, which actually end up binding onto your cells in your body, faking them out literally. Just your cells say, oh, I'm stimulated. My receptors are bound. And the reverse T3 has very little effect of any. And as a result, your normal hormones can't stimulate. So you can be low thyroid, tired, depressed, constipated, but it gets really bad. And this is, a lot of people are amazed by this. You can lose the outer third of your eyebrows. You can have hair thinning, all from low thyroid. But, of course, standard test says, oh, you're normal. Well, normal in today's world is broken, first off, by most lab tests. But you're not looking at the full picture of what is normal and is it normal for us, you or me, compared to where I used to run thyroid-wise.
Interesting. So should men take DHEA supplements?
Great question. So DHEA is, of course, a building block for both testosterone and, of course, estrogen. So this is where doing a laboratory test, like as offered through Labrex, which as consumers you can actually order through cpmedical.net. You can get on their website, sign up under new patient, and or call them. And you can even mention this show and mention Eva sent you. They'll take good care of you. And you'll access that Labrex test through CP Medical as a consumer. No doctor's order required. Of course, tell your doctor or share your results. But you want to, and what I've just done for myself, same test I recommend for everybody. I've done an estrogen, yeah, as a guy too, a progesterone, a testosterone, a DHEA, and a four-time cortisol test. And so in my case, my DHEA levels were okay. However, I did a test just recently for a gentleman 2 years younger than me, and his DHEA levels were not even measurable. His testosterone levels were low, and there's no question he would be the perfect candidate for that DHEA because it's going to help fuel his testosterone pathways, help him with the stress of his life, and as a result, you know, the concept of one shoe doesn't fit all or the Cinderella complex. And really getting that test done, and what's so exciting is these tests are very affordable, and realizing that you're creating a foundation upon the rock opposed to just making a guess. So it's pretty good, and actually in his case, I give him a very large dose of DHEA. We're going to remeasure him in about 4 to 6 weeks and see whether relative to his chemistry, his absorption of his intestinal tract, that we're actually getting a healthy DHEA, and more importantly in his case, we're actually seeing his testosterone levels start leveling out and improving because I could have given him a bioidentical testosterone, but more importantly, if I can get his body to do it by itself, even better.
So I have a question. Do you, before you had your test, your personal test, do you do supplements yourself? I mean, I'm wondering why your levels are good. Do you take care of yourself?
Actually, great question. Some people will have what we call chinks in our armor, or weak areas, and kind of like the proverbial Achilles heel, if you know the Greek mythology of dipping into the river, and the one part that didn't get dipped was his heel, and that became his weak spot. So some of us genetically have predispositions. If you look culturally at 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 generations ago, you know, where are their strengths or their weaknesses? In my case, apparently my adrenal glands over the course of time have learned to keep on cranking out DHEA. So I think a part of it is that. In my case, yeah, I take a lot of supplements. A day doesn't go by that I don't take at least a handful, at least 20 various supplements to support those pathways and nourish them so that my body can keep on going as I travel across the country and I write and I see patients. Because so often we're none of us healthcare providers and none of us listening are immune to the statistical fact that if we don't take care of ourselves, we can easily become another statistic out there. And we're all too aware and too conscious to just sit back and allow that to happen.
I'd like to just briefly mention one thing. A lot of people think because they eat allegedly healthy that they will get their nutrition from food. I'm of the opinion that you're not going to get the nutrition that you need out of food by going to your everyday grocery store for many reasons, irradiation, old food, you know, buying canned food, buying genetically modified food. So do you have a comment on that?
I'm in full agreement. If you think about how we can get tomatoes year-round, we're forcing our crops to, of course, be produced and harvested at the wrong time of year. And, of course, we import a lot of things into the U.S. borders, North America here, from countries which don't have as clear a standard. And mind you, our standards can also be dramatically improved as which pesticides and herbicides. In fact, the Environmental Protection Agency has just raised the levels of pesticide herbicides allowed for pomegranates and certain other imported fruits and vegetables. But also the fact is 200 years ago, we had about 21 inches of topsoil. So think of a little house in the prairie days, and they had a little piece of land. It had never been farmed by Caucasian folks, maybe Native Americans had. But now we, year after year, generation after generation, keep on going back to the same land, now through our engineering of grains and crops, get more bushels per acre, but never replace those trace minerals, never replace the iodine, the selenium, the chromium, and the other nutrients. So even if you had really great farmland to start with, by just adding nitrogen and iron and a few other sundries to make the crops grow tall, thick, and lush and green doesn't mean that's being delivered. Then we process them, we cook them, we irradiate them, and as a result, what do we have? We have all kinds of problems, and we're also feeding our cattle and our livestock grain. Generally, they don't eat corn. We're feeding them corn, whereas before they were grass-fed, and there's research showing that grass-fed beef, for example, that wander around in the field like they used to, not only are they healthier, they have better essential fatty acids, less toxic fats in them. So once again, we're overfed, undernourished, and that's one reason I supplement a good diet opposed to substituting, because pills can never substitute for eating well.
Yeah, somebody said something to me the other day about fish. They said, I can't remember who it was, but whoever it was said, you know, even when you're trying to get your omega-3s and you eat fish, if you eat farm-raised fish that it's raised on grain, you're not going to get those omega-3s because they're not eating the algae in the ocean, and I'd never thought about that.
Well, not only that, but when we have farm-raised fish, they're in a stressful environment. It's no different than the livestock or the chickens, which are now raised within about 48 days to the point where if we don't harvest them, quote-unquote, and I'll use that word very loosely, they can't stand and the legs will break from underneath them, and they're fed full of antibiotics. In the case of the fish, they're stressed, and I have a friend which is an organic cattle farmer, and he actually used to, prior to becoming an organic cattle farmer, spray human manure, which he got for free from the local waste plant, onto the field. And needless to say, his observation, just one farmer, but his observation was the breech calves, the miscarriages, as well as just maternal death of the cows dramatically increased as they ate all those hormones, which, as we know now, with the hormones which we're excreting into the wastewater and then re-drinking, actually is causing all kinds of problems for us. So it's the same thing. It's like the farm practices are very antiquated and or, in this case, we think we're doing something smart as human beings, but what we're really doing is not eating necessarily the things we want to.
And that kind of makes me sick thinking about that.
Yeah, well, and it's sad. I mean, the whole concept of better living through chemistry, there are some great advances that humanity has moved forward, but you have to use common sense. Why would you actually put waste materials and then have the grass grow out of those waste materials, have the animals eat it, when, of course, it's waste material? It's and of course, we now know that in our water ways across the U.S., we have the Prozacs and antibiotics and antipsychotics and other things in the water stream because you can't filter them out. Then our fish are consuming them. And, you know, it's a sad commentary. But it's actually, I think, the American Journal of Preventive Medicine that reported back in spring of 2007 that only 11% of us are consuming our 5 to 7 servings of fresh fruits and vegetables. And so even if we had fresh fruits and vegetables we wanted to eat, the kind like we used to get when I was a kid out of our backyard, which now either people don't have time, the land, or they don't have the economic resources to actually grow it themselves because they're too busy trying to pay the mortgage. And as a result, we're not eating foods very well. And if only 11% of us are getting our 5 to 7 servings of fresh fruits and vegetables, that means 89% of us are failing. And that's where a supplement comes in, like Extension Resveratrol, something which I take, which delivers 300 milligrams of trans resveratrol, equivalent to over 50 bottles of red wine. Obviously, if you drink 50 bottles of red wine, you have a lot of problems, including being unemployed the next day. But I can now do this in one pill, thanks to the fact that there's a technology to extract all naturally the resveratrol and help fortify our guardian gene, help with our lipid peroxidation of our LDL, our bad cholesterol. And so that's like, for example, here I'm sitting in my home office as we're chatting, and I'm looking at my pills, and I've got my extension resveratrol prominently right here from complementary prescriptions to make sure that I'm hedging the bet on my antioxidant levels, which most of us, every time we breathe, let alone when we work out, if when we all right now decide tomorrow we're going to work out harder than ever, and assuming our heart was in shape to do it, what's going to happen? We're going to increase our free radical damage because oxygen breathing causes free radical damage. The moment you do aerobic exercise, you need more antioxidants.
Interesting. So what does resveratrol do? Is that, it's not a statin, is it?
No, resveratrol is actually derived from red grapes. It's actually part of the French paradox. And it's been argued that the French get away with some of their richer eating foods because they drink red wine. And so resveratrol is actually an extract of the grape. It's also going to be extracted from a plant called polygonum as well, or knotweed. But actually, in the case of what I have here, it's a grape extract of trans resveratrol. So it's the trans form. And when we hear trans fats are bad, in this case, trans resveratrol is the active form of resveratrol derived from the red wine or grape.
Okay. So I just got an email from someone that says, low thyroid leads to loss of outer third of the eyebrow. How does that work?
Well,
somebody must have part of their eyebrow missing.
Yeah, and I kind of sometimes joke, well, if it's not a bad wax job, think thyroid. And have you got overzealous on plucking? It seems that, of course, we know, and I've diagnosed many people over the years with low thyroid, even before I got their blood test, just from their symptoms of being more constipated, drier skin, weight gain, lower body temperature, hormonal irregulation, menstrual cycle thrombus. But the outer third of the eyebrow, they're really not sure exactly why it targets that, but the outer third starts thinning and becoming more short. We know that hair will thin, and often if you especially see a young woman, 30 or 40 years old, actually with thinning of her hair, one of the first things you always want to look for is low thyroid. And so it's kind of interesting, but as to why the outer one-third, it's the same question as to why do people with low zinc often get little white dots or lines on their fingernails? Good question. I mean, we really don't know, or why when we have lower essential fatty acids, you were mentioning the fish and the farm fish, which you are correct, they don't have the same quality of essential fatty acids. So the question is, why do we get little bumps on the back of our arms where our triceps are, our upper arms? We get these fine little raised bumps, very common in children, and we see a lot of the children that come to my clinical practice which have little white dots on their fingernails, they have the little bumps on the back of their arms, they got concentration, focus problems, they often carry a label of ADD or ADHD, or maybe they've escaped the label, hopefully, but they're now working on concentrating and focusing and learning better, and we look at white dots on their nails, we see the outer third of the eyebrow, and all of a sudden it's like, why does our body present? Because I think we're intended to be smart and look at what are these clues and how do we address them. And so what we do as naturopathic physicians, a lot of holistic medical providers out there, looking for those clues, because our body's always talking to us. Just like if a person has really bad breath or their bowels don't smell so good and they're having lots of less than pleasant flatulence, it's a sign that there's an imbalance in the body, because the body is usually very non-toxic. There's not a whole lot of body odor. There's not a lot of excretion. And the moment your body presents with a symptom, we have to play detective and figure out what's going on.
So, excuse me. Tell me what symptom that represents. My little boy has that symptom sometimes. All those symptoms you just said.
Well,
because he has this really bad breath and he has bowel problems. And tell me what comes to mind when you say those things.
Yeah.
What are you thinking about?
Well, obviously, in your case, of course, your little boy is more holistically raised. So I'm going to pretend it's just a normal, less healthy boy. And so a less healthy boy, we have to worry about, has he taken too many antibiotics, and is his friendly bacteria thrown off? And, of course, your case, that would not be the case. The other thing is he eating too much red meat? And when
no,
I say too
not
much...
that either.
Okay, because that would...
But I do give him colloidal silver sometimes. Would that do it?
Colloidal silver shouldn't, especially if you're doing plenty of good friendly bacteria, either from yogurt or probiotics. But whenever we, and the thing is, if the bowels are slower, and if we're not having a good two bowel movements a day, we're going to have what's called fermentation or putrefaction. Fermentation is loud thunderous gas. Putrefaction is a rotting of protein where it sits there, just like roadkill, and just rots basically inside your 25 feet of small intestine, 5 feet of colon. And typically when your person's more slow with their bowels, they'll have worse breath. The other big issue with bad breath is postnasal drip and overgrowth of bacteria in the back of the throat, the nasal pharynx, which then throughout the night we actually have problems. And or if a person snores, especially kids, but also adults, if we are mouth breathers at night, it either suggests that we have a sinus issue, a deviated septum, or worst case scenario, sleep apnea. And even children can get sleep apnea. I diagnose 20 or 30 people a month with sleep apnea, which means that they're not breathing sufficiently to sustain the body, and as a result, for the kids, it leads to concentration problems, the label ADD, ADHD, but it also causes bowel problems and other imbalances because the body is not restoring itself at night, and so many of us are overworked and underslept, and we don't get the restoration. And of course, if you look at the word restoration, first four letters, rest, R-E-S-T, we're just too tired. But as in the case of a little boy with bad breath and bowel things, we might also look at either food allergies, which is also a test offered through cpmedical.net, which allows for a simple diabetic finger stick, collecting about 6 or 7 drops of blood, give or take, depending on how big the drops of blood, setting off to lab and gain 96 foods back as to whether you have a delayed food sensitivity. Is there a food unbeknownst to mom or dad that says, hey, you have a problem? And in the case of one of my kids, I found out he was allergic to lettuce. And I, of course, being a naturopathic physician, I'm a big, vegetable pusher.
Mm-hmm.
And he always says, I don't feel good eating salad. I'm saying, oh, come on, you're just being a kid. And found out, sure enough, he was allergic to lettuce. Bad parent.
You know, you are absolutely right, because with that sinus thing in my child, because I noticed he has a black bottom sheet on his bed sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And I notice he has these little sputum marks all over the sheet near his pillow.
Yep.
I never thought that was connected with his gut. That's a good thing to think about.
And what's interesting is if we have any of us postnasal drip, what postnasal drip is, or phlegm, it's mucosaccharides. So it's actually polymucosaccharides, which means lots of sugars. And sugar is the breeding ground for bacteria. So if it's sustained in the sinuses and not being swallowed down the throat, of course, we're moist, we're warm, and we have sugar. We're petri dishes. Now, if you swallow that mucus down into your stomach and down into your GI tract, of course, you're going to be growing other bacteria. Not all of them are going to be good, and they're going to put off gases and smells, just like the back of our throat. And as a result, we're just culturing stuff continuously. And so it's intriguing when we look at the body. It's simple, yet at the same time complex.
Okay, it is, let's see what time it is. We have about 10 minutes or 12 minutes left. So I want you to talk a little bit about metabolic syndrome and hormones, and then I want you to take some time to talk about whatever you want to talk about that you think is important that we haven't covered already.
Okay, great. Well, thank you. Actually, as always, wonderful to be on your show. You're such a gracious host, and I applaud you for all the years that you've been educating everybody. Metabolic syndrome is a term which actually describes pre-diabetes. And according to the Centers for Disease Control, believe it or not, out of Atlanta, Georgia, they estimate that 60 million U.S. citizens are pre-diabetic. And, of course, we know there's well over 10 million overt diabetics in the U.S. And so the question is, if there's 60 million of us, and we're waiting to cross that magical line, that line of demarcation between diabetic, non-diabetic, and the classical signs of metabolic syndrome is either low blood sugar or reactive blood sugars, or gaining a little bit of weight, our cholesterol levels are rising, our triglyceride levels are rising compared to where they used to be for us, we might notice our blood pressure may be higher or not, and we're just noticing we're not feeling as good. These are all classical pre-diabetic or what we call metabolic syndrome cases. We might even have a fatty liver, and that fatty liver is interesting because our liver enzymes may be higher, or if they did an ultrasound, they might say you have a fatty liver, which means that our body's not metabolizing, and just like the term says, metabolic syndrome, our metabolism is off, and now we have a syndrome or a condition. And so what we want to do is be very proactive, and I use a combination of products and also really augment fiber in a person's diet. So many of us have a very fiber-devoid diet, and I have diabetics that come in or pre-diabetics, and I'll incorporate some simple non-drug therapies to start with, along with a mild amount of exercise. And my little, what I call magical recipe is the 3-2-1+1 diet. So three vegetables, two fruits, a grain, and a large portion of lean protein of preference throughout the day. The ratio by the end of the day is a 3-part vegetable, 2-part fruit, 1-part grain including corn, by the way, and then a large protein. And it doesn't have to be 1-1-2-3, but the ratio at the end of the day has to be mostly vegetables, got some fruit, and got a little bit of grain. We overdo grain. And then what we also incorporate is a supplement from CP Medical. And the reason I keep on mentioning CP Medical is I'm the editor of their newsletter. I know their products well. And it's a product which I've used for family for diabetes. And it's actually called Gluc Control. And Gluc Control, along with a diet, and along with something else, fiber. What I do is, even my spaghetti people, I have lots of people that are quasi-vegetarians. They won't eat meat. They don't even eat eggs. May do a little dairy or cheese. But what they'll do is, they're big pasta. They're basically carboholics. And what we do is we actually incorporate fiber with their meals. So even if they ate spaghetti, we're going to make it a higher fiber meal and lower the glycemic load and burden, and as a result, insulin surge, by incorporating fiber capsules like FiberRite, or another fiber, or ground flax seeds onto their meal. And now all of a sudden that spaghetti became a high-fiber meal because we have all the supplemental fiber being added. Is that the best approach? No, but we meet people where they're at. So Gluc Control, fiber, the 3-2-1+1. And my last little trick, which I use, is what I call the 10-minute rule. You don't have to have a fancy gym membership to be in shape. And so I tell people, assuming you're in a safe environment to go do this, is you walk to your front door with keys in hand, and you walk 10 minutes any direction from your home. It will not only lower your stress levels, it actually will also, of course, get some cardio going for you. And over the course of a month or two, you'll notice within those 10 minutes, you maybe walked to start with 6 blocks. Now you're walking 8 blocks or 10 blocks. Then at the 10-minute mark, you turn around and you walk home. You got a 20-minute workout, no gym membership, didn't have to drive someplace. So even in a really tight schedule, you actually get the job done. So to recap, the 3-2-1+1 diet, the 3 vegetables, 2 fruits, 1 grain, and a lot of lean protein. Then what we do is we do the Gluc Control and some FiberRite and maybe some ground flax seeds and exercise. And what I find with my practice, and I also found with a medical doctor that's locally, He had great success in reversing with simple diet and lifestyle, and we had to figure out what changed our ecology to be an out of balance to get metabolic syndrome, which is to such an extent even the CDC, Center for Disease Control, is tracking that number. So it's pretty bad when the government's tracking trending towards, you know, that overt obese, which we call diabetes. But even my diabetic patients follow the same approach, and it really helps them gain control. And I do have to point out that metformin, or glucophage, which is used a lot for diabetes, can cause, according to, I think it was the 43rd Congress on Diabetes, a B12 deficit. So those people that are taking that medicine might want to talk to their medical doctor or healthcare provider and make sure that they are checking into their B12 levels and making sure they're doing good.
Very interesting. Now, I just want to, you have another book that you've sent me that we've not had an opportunity to talk about tonight, but you are going to come back and talk about that, and that's about allergies, right?
Yeah, called Liberations of Allergies. It's one of my other books that just came out, and it's a book I'm passionate about because we have a lot of allergies in our family, and most of the books I write about because either friends, family, or myself suffer from them. So whether it be andropause, I wrote a book on fertility. I'm actually now writing a book on sleep apnea, which is about ready to come out. My passion is to educate people about trends, and none of us are, you know, immune to that. So, yeah, allergies is definitely a book. And a lot of my articles and so forth are on the website, drmeletus.com, drmeletus.com, all for free, and can gain access to them. My whole goal in life is to change the world's health 1% at a time. And with a consciousness of your listening audience and yourself, I'm hoping we all share the message of health so that when we have healthier friends and family, we're happier, they're happier, and we can actually move the ball forward in making this a better place.
I get that article that you write every so often. It's a most excellent article. Where can other people sign up to get that email?
Actually, my newsletter comes through cpmedical.net. You can sign up for free. And you can actually do that by going to my website or going directly to cpmedical.net, and you'll just sign up under New Patient. You don't need to be a patient to get the newsletter. It's free every month. It has health tips and also has what I call the Dear Abby, or in this case, the Dear Dr. Melita section, where people write in questions. I answer them, and then they get posted in a newsletter on everything from Alzheimer's, gastrointestinal problems, ADD, you name it. I probably answer about 150 to 200 questions a month.
I don't know how you do everything you do, Chris. All right, we got about 3 or 4 minutes, and one thing that I wanted you to touch on that we didn't was testosterone and Alzheimer's. Is there an implication there?
Yeah, actually, there's research showing that neurogenesis, which is the regeneration of brain cells, and many of us were saying brain cells can't regenerate. Oh, yes, they can. There's evidence showing that brain cells do regenerate. And so neurogenesis is androgen-driven. And so androgens for men and women are testosterone and DHEA predominantly. And so those two are very, very important. And there's one other one in which I know you wrote in your article, which was a phenomenal article you wrote on hormones, which I encourage everybody to read. It's called pregnenolone. So we got to look at our DHEA levels, our pregnenolone levels, and our testosterone levels. And once again, men and women alike, we can't buy into this concept that men are testosterone, women are estrogen. That's so 1920s, 30s, and yet we're still told this, we're still prescribed that way by too many physicians. I have the privilege of working with a phenomenal group at the John Lee Institute, which actually are going around educating doctors, and you'll be surprised how many medical doctors, nurse practitioners, are actually getting educated about this. Another group I work with is called the A4M, worldhealth.net, also educating thousands of doctors and healthcare providers on looking at the holistic aspect of us, that we are unique creatures and we don't fall into a unique male or female category. We fall into our own unique category, then our biochemistry as individuals have to be addressed.
I just got another email from someone. Is there a connection between sleep apnea and allergies? Testosterone for that matter?
Great question. The answer is yes and yes. If you have sleep apnea, you're more likely to have lower testosterone, and for that matter, for a woman, also lower estrogen levels, because the gonads or the ovary testicle are being undernourished, and I call it the grapes dying on the vine. If you don't water the garden, it's not going to flourish. You're going to have decreased hormone production, and your memory is going to go south, all things being equal. And if you have more allergies, you're more stuffy, you got more phlegm, more congestion, and or if you're a snorer, you're more likely to have apnea as well. So allergies will make apnea worse. Apnea will also cause acid reflux, which will make you have sinusitis and allergy-like symptoms when they might not be allergies. It might just be due to acid reflux from the apnea causing you to percolate acid up into your throat and your nasal passages. And as a result, you're not going to get oxygen to your 75 trillion cells, and you're not going to get that full level of passion. And they say 38,000 people a year die from heart-related apnea conditions as they sleep. Far too many people. And they say that driving with sleep apnea is equal to driving drunk. It's just
really?
Equal. Yep.
What exactly is it? Quickly. I mean, we got like 2 minutes left.
Well, sleep apnea is merely the fact that as we're all sitting here, hopefully, we're all having oxygen level above 95, 96%, somewhere between 96 and 100%. So we're taking deep breaths, we're not talking too much, we're getting lots of oxygen to our tissues. If you, as you sleep, snore or stop breathing and drop your oxygen levels more than 4%, it qualifies for sleep apnea. So if you're going below 92% oxygen levels, it's like tying a tourniquet or a string really tightly to your finger and then expecting your finger to work the next day as you're typing or clicking on your mouse. It's not going to perform. Imagine that at the global level of 75 trillion cells. So even if you don't stop breathing and you don't have to startle yourself awake, you don't have to be gasping for air, most of the patients I diagnose, they're just tired. And they realize, no wonder you're tired, because you're not resting. You actually have higher blood pressure, very common with apnea, and also hormonal issues, adrenal issues, all because you're not sleeping, and actually you're stressed because you're auto-suffocating all night long.
I hope my boyfriend just heard what you said.
And I can tell you that people tell other people, and they actually save their lives.
And are you listening, boyfriend? Are you listening to this? Okay. Chris, you're amazing. You really are amazing. You're just an encyclopedia, and I thank you. I want you to come back sometime and talk about the sleep apnea book and the allergy book, and I look forward to having you.
Well, it'll
thank
be an honor.
Thank you for
anytime.
Taking time to come on my show.
Thank you. Wellness to everyone. Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Hi, this is Elliot Dasher, author of Integral Health. Integral Health. Integral Health. You can hear me and others speaking about consciousness and health. Consciousness and health. Just tune in every Sunday evening at 7 p.m. To Infinite Consciousness with Eva Hare.